thank you for joining me for episode 23 of The Mark of a Druid. I do suggest you start the story at the beginning, and if you want more information about me, the author, Rhonda R. Carpenter, please, by all means, go to themarkofadruid.com. Now, on with our story. Chapter 33, The Gathering, Part 1. Craig adjusted the time on his watch while the Boeing 747 lifted from LaGuardia's tarmac. "Right on time," he said to Ryerson. "Setting that watch for Los Angeles time," Craig grinned at his friend. Craig nodded and tucked a wavy strand of blonde hair behind his ear. "About 5 hours, and we'll have our feet back on the ground." He turned his attention to the page of numbers in front of him. "You know, I've been looking at this bloody thing for so long, I can't tell anymore if it's ready or not."
"It's ready," Ryerson said flatly. "All we have to do now is follow the plan. We make it through these meetings and decide if the deal is for us."
"Right, right. I'm a bit nervous. I mean, after 3 years of development, we've a lot to gain. But I'm not sure about the move to the good old U.S. of A.
Nothing is set in stone, old man. If what RJ presents holds true, then we've a bit of negotiating room for the logistics.
Heck, they make the offer sweet enough. I'll be wanting to emigrate," Ryerson said with the wink of his eye. The seatbelt light blinked out.
"Think I'll stretch my legs." Ryerson rose, arched, and knuckled his lower back while walking to the lavatory. When he returned, Craig was dozing, his face covered with the baseball cap. Ryerson decided rest was the best cure for pending jet lag. He buckled into his seat and drifted off with the roar of the engines vibrating beneath him.
Among Adam's people, Beltane was a time to be celebrated. It was the welcoming of the coming summer, a time for sacrifices to the Great Mother. Adam did not feel like celebrating. He, too, would be making sacrifices tonight. His clan had traveled 5 days to the Valley of the Stone Circle. He was tired of training for the life he was supposed to embrace.
"Why M?" he wondered. "Why her? Was she here in the crowd below?"
He focused his mind to stillness and scanned the Valley of the Stone Circle. The sight before him was one few had witnessed. All clans gathered as one was an unusual occurrence, happening only once every 25 full cycles of the sun. Arthfiel had said, "A Beltane of momentous importance." Adam had to admit, the sight was impressive. Custom demanded that 3 to 5 high druids of each clan attend a ceremony of this magnitude, their tents clustered like white-cloaked sentinels standing guard on the entrance to an ancient wreath of blue stone. Tent flaps were open like long white sleeves caught in a breeze. It seemed for a time they were alive, huddling and then reaching for sanctuary. In the center of the stone circle, bare-chested men hauled wood and stacked the pyre for the coming festivities. Beyond the sacred space, a field of multicolored encampments stretched out to the foothills. He should have felt excited, but it was the morning of Beltane, and Adam's mood rejected thoughts of celebration. Instead, apprehension and doubt filled him. Amber eyes searched from his place on the hillside. "Is she here?" he wondered. Arthfiel's pronouncement that he was to participate in tonight's ceremony weighed heavily. The old druid minced no words. "Adam, you will make yourself known as a changeling before the council tonight. After the lighting of the fires and the dance of light, I will send for you. Ready yourself." Adam knew this night. The clans would know him as a wolf. They would see his manhood markings. There was to be no more secrecy in what he was, or what he could become. He wondered if becoming the wolf in body made him a wolf in his heart. But who was he to ask such questions? He struggled with the idea that he was of major importance in the great pattern of life, and tonight he must sacrifice the one thing he had clung to since receiving the mark, his anonymity. Adam turned his back to the stone circle and strolled to the stream just south of the encampment.
When he closed on the stream's tree-scattered bank, the sound of voices brought him from his thoughts. He listened closely to the sound of female voices raised in song, to the coming of the sun. Adam was lured by the singing, pulled to the song, but found the singer to be an old woman perched upon a boulder. She was staring down at two young females who took up her song. One was clearly still a girl, with white blonde hair and a small frame. His heart skipped a beat when he saw the fiery red hair of the eldest girl. "She's the one," he thought. His skin prickled. This was the spirit walker he had followed. Adam stood frozen. He could not stop himself from listening to the song, no, to her voice. When it was finished, he felt a sadness wash over him. He remained motionless and concealed behind a large tree. "This is she. She who parts the curtain, who crosses the veil," he thought. The two young females were sent to the stream with a wave of the old crone's hand. They filled their skins with water, then stripped their clothes and began to wash themselves in the shallow currents. He watched. They played and splashed each other with cold water, giggling and shrieking for one another to stop. Adam thanked the goddess for providing a mostly unobscured view of the unclothed bodies. It was not his desire to look upon them secretly, but he could not stop himself. The old woman looked in his direction, but quickly turned back to her charges, calling to the youngest of the two. Her name was Athene. The older was now alone in the stream, her back to Adam, and he saw her shoulder. She carried the mark. Adam looked down at his right hand and then back to her. She was too far away for Adam to be completely sure, but the symbol appeared to be the same. It had to be so. It would only make sense, he told himself. The desire for a closer look was overwhelming. He shed his clothes and tucked them under the branches of a tree that had hidden him from view. Then Adam called to the wolf. After quickly shifting forms, he slowly and silently emerged from the tree's shelter. In his wolf form, and under the cover of low-lying branches, he crept closer. The red-haired beauty was nearly dressed when he drew nigh to her. He had missed his chance. Adam should have retreated at once, but something held him against his better judgment. The old woman called to her, "Alian, come, there's much still to do." "Yes, Dubjila." Tangled russet ringlets dripped on a saffron smock, leaving wet patches as she ran to the old druidess's side. His father had been right. She was a woman full grown, and Adam had seen no one more beautiful, not even the seductive Leanne. When they had departed, Adam shed his four-legged form, bathed in the stream, and dressed. He threaded his way through the camp. One huddled group of women heaped mounds of mistletoe near another huddled group. The second group wove many crowns. The best and largest would go to the high druids and druidesses of each clan to be worn during the ceremony. After the lighting of the Beltane fires, all would wear mistletoe in honor of the Great Mother. Other groups crushed berries of deep purple. They had been carefully gathered from small thorny bushes, which maintained their dusty green foliage even through the bitterness of winter. The fruit of this bush was an important part of the ceremony as well. After being crushed and mixed with water to render a paste, each member of the clan would be painted with a blessing symbol. The fires, doused hours before, left smoke clinging to the very air. It hovered above the valley, pretending to be clouds. Camped directly across from Adam's, assembled a towering wheat likeness of the Mother Goddess. These would be burnt within the gateways of the stone circle. The sun was low in the western sky. Preparations drew to completion. Arthfiel sat on a log, talking to Adam's father when he arrived. "I must join the Eldas," Arthfiel stated plainly. "We are beginning. Gather the dancers of light, Adam, and meet me at the field of sacrifice." The gnarled old man did not wait for confirmation, but turned and strode away. "Yes, father, I shall see you at the circle." Adam forced a smile. "I'll no be missing a sight like that, you dancing in the light. Go, go." Leif's beard split, flashing white teeth, and he sauntered toward the milling crowd. Adam entered the tent and changed into a loincloth cut from tanned cowhide. A flash of heat tingled his cheeks. It covered much less than he preferred. He stepped from the tent bare-chested. A plainly cut brown woolen brat sat on his shoulders. Making his coal-black hair purposefully unruly, he streaked his face with blue-gray dye. The other 12 dancers were not difficult to identify. They all looked similar, with only slight variations in the painted faces and hands, necks and backs. The warrior clan's offering was ready, a row of 13 poles, junted from the ground, and held decorated clay pots filled with pitch. The vessels were cradled in knotted slings and fitted with long handles of braided rope. Once lit, the flaming vessels would be swung over the heads of their bearers to create the dance of light. The dancers, together with their pitch pots, formed a column and advanced to the field in an impressive display. The bards of each clan gathered in a group, speaking in hushed whispers. Every other voice raised in a song to the setting of the sun on this final day of the cycle. Eventually, the bards left the huddle one by one and moved to stand at the heelstone when the glowing orb was no longer visible in the sky, but instead cast its light about the drifting clouds, causing them to come to life, reflecting orange, pink, yellow, and then mixtures of all colors. The watchers rejoiced, stomping their feet and beating their thighs. There came the sound of a horn. It blasted 3 times for each of the clans. The blood of 13 prime cows spurted and pooled onto the earth. Honey, grain, and milk were given in sacrifice to the goddess mother as a gift to her greatness and in gratitude for sustaining the lives of her people. In unison, a circle of black-robed bards began to speak.
From the beginning,
male voices rang, while the bards dropped to their knees and revealed a smaller, green-clad circle of women.
Through the ethers, through the ethers, through the ethers, through the ethers.
Female voices echoed one after another. Bards stood with each repeat until a perfect balance of male-female was achieved, completing the circle anew.
Before time was time, the Great Mother has been,
they intoned together.
She cradled us in her womb. The Mother brought us forth, stretching out her hands to us and lifting us to her breast, suckling us with her great bounty. When we die, she will take us into her arms that we may return to tend the groves once more and for all the lifetimes to come.
A single note from a horn blew, and the bards raised their voices to match it. Drums beat, and the high druids stepped into the gateway of the henge. Young girls, all clad in saffron smocks, hair plaited with red and green ribbons, scurried to the white-clad druids. They delivered clay jars of herbs, specifically mixed to call upon the protection of the Mother Goddess. Snowy robes billowed in the wind as the elders converged on the pyre. Drums echoed their footsteps and voices lifted in wordless song, then fell silent.
We come, Mother. Fill our fields with grain, our streams with water, our bellies with meat, our hearths with fire.
The druids threw the clay jars, smashing them on the pyre. They lifted hands to the sky and lightning struck. The pyre burst into flame. A hushed awe passed through the crowd. The high druids returned to the gateways, hoods thrown back, mistletoe crowns exposed and broad smiles visible. Adam and the other light dancers took up positions just outside the stone circle, 10 paces away from the high druid of their clan. Behind Adam, a young woman of his clan approached with an unlit torch in her right hand and a circlet of bronze on her upper arm. He knew her, but had paid her little mind, as she was much younger than he. Firtha was her name, a plain girl with mousy brown hair, squared features, and wide hips. Good for childbearing, Carmag had said one day not long ago. She brushed past him, torch extended to Arthfiel.
then turned, a seductive smile playing at the corner of her thick lips. The smile was not meant for Adam. He felt relief and a sense of comfort, for it was meant for Batar. Adam hoped that if there were someone to love, his old friend would find his way. There. She was carrying a torch to the gateway. The red-headed Alion solemnly handed it to the old crone, whom he'd seen at the stream earlier. His heart raced, and confusion took over his thoughts. Arthfiel's eyes followed her, nodding his approval. She did not look in Adam's direction as she returned to the throng and disappeared from sight. A thought crystallized in Adam's brain. She was sad. Adam knew the ceremony well and waited his time to dance. Arthfiel, along with the other 12 High Druids, approached the fires of Beltane in the center of the stone monument, with unlit torches in hand. Sparks fluttering in the air like fireflies on a hot summer night, spiraling into nothingness, the Raven Clan placed wheat goddess figurines just outside the gateways. Torches blazing, the council set the likenesses to flame and formed a single file line, exiting the stone megalith and circling one right and one left until each stood before the gateway assigned to their clan. Arthfiel faced Adam as the others faced their clan dancer. Touching the pitch pot with the flame, they stepped back and handed the torches to virgin girls who had not yet taken the rites of womanhood. He knew that an innocent must deliver the ritual flames of Beltane to the clans. The 13 virgins, serious in their duties, retreated to deliver flames to every hearth in the encampments. Adam raised his hood and watched them go. The feast horn blew once, and each dancer swung the pitch pot over his head, building momentum. A warbled, whirling whine shattered the night. Drums hammered and song filled the darkness. The pitch pots streaked above hooded heads, and spirals of light danced golden and red against the black sky. Young, strong limbs leaped from the ground. Adam became one with the drumming. Powerful arms whipped the pitch pots into perpetual motion. The heartbeat of the mother echoed in the valley. Carved wooden pipes whistled for the wind. The flames of Beltane roared and crackled. Jugs of water were emptied onto the ground. The rhythm slowed. The feast horn sounded, and the dancers stopped. The new year was born. Summer would come yet again. But for Adam, the sacrifice had not yet been offered. In accordance with custom, he returned the pitch pot to his High Druid's tent. To be carried home, he washed the dancer's paint from his face, dressed in woolen breeches and a loose white shirt, then slipped the bronze-carved band about his throat. He aimlessly walked the campsites, greeting and sharing mead with men of his age. Celebration was in full swing, and a sense of urgency stopped Adam from having any real fun. Only once in the time he roamed among the clans did he glimpse Alion, as she was ushered past him to the council. At the time, he felt it was just as well that there was no opportunity to disobey Arthfiel. Well into the night, Lef was called to the council. Adam's father was a proud man. He walked to the heelstone with deliberate strides, back straight, shoulders squared, head held high. Just before dawn, Lef returned to where Adam sat on the ground, leaning against a log, eyes closed in deep thought. Arthfiel wishes your presence at the council. He asks that you prepare yourself for the changing. You are to wear nothing but your brat, son. Go to him. Adam stripped his clothes and wrapped his brat around his body. He left his pouch in the hands of his father, where he knew it would be well protected. A blue stone lay at the center of the council's meeting area. Adam waited until he was acknowledged. To his surprise, it was not Arthfiel who called him, but Bele, High Druid of the Raven Clan. He stood atop the flat, blue stone, lifted his staff into the air, and brought it down in three thunderous blows. Adam of the Amber Eyes, brother to the wolf, I ask you to show the council and all present that you are a changeling. A hush fell over the crowd, who had crept forward to witness the shapeshifter. For the Mother Goddess, Adam said, thrusting his arms into the air, exposing the backs of his hands for all to see. Crouching to the ground, he raised the hood of his brat so that no part of him was exposed. The transformation itself was a secret that could not be shared. Adam silently called to the spirit of the wolf. Three heartbeats passed, and nothing happened. Then another three followed. Would he fail this test? A hive of stinging bees filled his belly. He called to the spirit of the wolf again. He felt the change begin. When Adam was sure the transformation was complete, he moved from beneath the brat. An audible gasp was heard and released with an awe that seemed to circle him twice. This is the spirit of the wolf. He and he alone can join with the Great One to fulfill the prophecy. Without his wisdom and skill, the Great One will never be whole, and the prophecy will never be complete. Bele's voice was deep and resonant, and was carried by the wind to each ear in attendance. He let the words hang there until the power of them died away. When the time comes, he pointed his staff to each of the council members in turn, he will require your help. You will send the most powerful of your young druids with him. In this way, the druid way will never end. The council members murmured amongst themselves. The crowd spoke in questioning whispers. Bele raised his staff again, and a hush fell over the crowd. The stillness was pierced by a horrific scream. Chapter 34. Emergency Room. Andrea drove like a bat out of hell to the local hospital. Richard had not stopped crying, and the poor 12-year-old cradled his burnt forearm to his chest. "It's okay, sweetheart. It'll be fine," she murmured to her child. She had no idea what on earth had possessed him to burn himself. What Andrea did know is that her child was hurt and needed medical attention. "Mom, it hurts. It hurts," he whimpered. Andrea cut the corner into the parking lot. Flashing lights sped toward her car. Her arm instinctively pushed Richard back into the seat as she slammed on her brakes and swerved to miss the oncoming ambulance. The ambulance sped down the streets, sirens screeching, while the driver conversed with the ER doctor and the med tech performed CPR on Lisa Montgomery. The tech gelled the defibrillator paddles with a fluid motion. He shocked her once, twice, with no change. The ambulance tires squealed to a halt, narrowly missing the car that seemed to be in as much of a rush as it was. The team of hospital employees ran through the ER doors, and Lisa's lifeless body was rushed into the building. "Single gunshot wound to the neck. She's in cardiac arrest." The tech shook his head in dismay. "She said she was pregnant. Damn it, there was nothing I could do. She's lost too much blood." "How long?" the doctor asked. A flurry of blue scrubs dashed about the room, working on the patient and hooking up monitors. "Flatlined less than 2 minutes ago," the EMT responded. The emergency team worked on her for another 10 minutes, but to no avail. "Note the time of death, nurse. 8:46 p.m. Has someone contacted the family?" The doctor pulled off his rubber gloves and threw them across the room. "The police called her husband," the nurse said. "He's on his way. Let me know when he arrives and get her cleaned up. He doesn't need to see her like this." The doctor moved to the sink. Blood circled the drain and then disappeared from sight. He was pretty sure he would never get used to gunshot wounds. At least he hoped he wouldn't. Richard waited behind the sliding curtain for the doctor while Andrea rubbed his back in slow circular motions. "Breathe slowly. That's it, sweetheart. Easy breaths." Worry furrowed her brow. She wiped his tear-stained face with a tissue. "Wanna tell me what happened?" He shook his head, bewildered. "You know what happened, Mom. It's throbbing. The doctor will be here soon. She brushed chestnut-colored hair off his forehead. Why don't you tell me what you were doing at the stove, Richard?
I don't know. Everything's fuzzy. I remember you telling me to hold my arm in the fire, but it wasn't a stove.
Honey, you were in the kitchen, standing at the stove. Richard, I never... Her last words were cut off as the curtain slid open and the doctor in green scrubs and a white coat entered. Hello, Richard. My name is Dr. Keeler, but you can call me Ted. He nodded toward Andrea. Let's have a look at that arm. He pulled on latex gloves and inspected the wound. Okay, Richard, I'm going to give you something for the pain, and we'll get this cleaned out. It's a second-degree burn and looks like it's been cooled off too quickly. Did you put ice on this, Miss McMurray?
Yes, yes, I did.
A wave of guilt rushed over her. Had she done something wrong? For future reference, cool water for the first 10 minutes on burns that are red or pink. The ice can damage the skin and leave scarring. How did this happen?
Tears flooded Richard's hazel eyes as he shrugged a reply.
I did it on the stove, I think.
Dr. Keeler shifted his gaze to Andrea. He's experiencing a bit of shock. Is that what happened?
I wasn't in the room, but I found him at the stove. It must have been an accident.
The doctor's right eyebrow twitched with suspicion. He filled the hypodermic and injected Richard with a combination of Demerol and Valium. If this was any bigger, he turned to the red medical waste container on the wall, broke the tip of the needle, and shoved it inside. I'd start an IV. I'll prescribe an oral pain medication and antibiotics for his use at home. This will probably leave a scar. And you'll want to contact the referral I'm going to give you about skin grafts. Removing his gloves, he scratched away at his file folder and prescription pad. Plenty of fluids and leave the wound exposed. Don't pop the blisters. Let them drain on their own. If you have to cover it, Miss McMurray, use dry, sterile gauze pads. I'll have the nurse bring you some in case you need them. Make sure he completes the course of antibiotics. You don't want a burn like this to get infected. He should see his pediatrician in a couple of days to check for infection. He handed her the referral and the prescriptions. Richard's lids fluttered and he sighed. The medication was starting to work. Andrea felt relief that he was now showing no further signs of pain. Ms. McMurray, he'll be asleep for a few minutes. He'll rest longer if you elevate the arm, preferably above the heart while he sleeps. It helps with the throbbing. He won't need the pain medication until morning. The shot I gave him should last through the night. Wait for the nurse to bring the release paperwork. Andrea was dumbfounded. The doctor had rattled it off quickly and with so little empathy that she felt disconnected. She wanted to ask how bad the scarring was going to be and a thousand other questions, but she just stared at the paperwork.
Whatever you say, doctor, she replied.
Dr. Keeler slid the curtain closed behind him, and Andrea stood over Richard, smoothing his hair. The nurse entered a short time later with the forms to be signed and a copy of the release instructions. There was a commotion at the nurse's station. Andrea heard an upraised voice.
Where is my wife? I want to see her. I don't believe you. Not Lisa. No, no, not Lisa.
The man broke down. Andrea thought she recognized him. The nurse, pushing Richard's wheelchair, said,
This way, I'll help you get him into the car. Would you like to bring it around to the doors?
Andrea nodded and half looked over her shoulder at the man weeping into his hands. I'll be right up. She had to force herself to a trot. Once out the doors, she jogged to her car and quickly pulled up to the exit. Andrea and the nurse lifted Richard into the car and buckled him in. He moaned something unintelligible. Andrea drove home and struggled to rouse Richard. Her bedroom was closer to the front door. Once there, she helped him out of his clothes and tucked him under the blankets. She propped his arm up on a pillow as the doctor had suggested. He mumbled and moaned.
Where am I?
You're at home, sweetheart.
Athene, white hair, help.
He released a shuddered breath, followed by a soft snore. Athene? White hair? How would he know that name? I'd like to say thank you to all my listeners. Please come back and see me again next week if you have questions about the Mark of a Druid, or you'd like to know more about me, the author. Please go to my websites at themarkofadruid.com or rondacarpenter.com. Until next time, take care.